Welcome to the Second Nature Show. My name is Dom Campbell, and I am here with my fellow show co-host, Alex Coble-Frakes. She's back. And and Donna Masterson.
Hello.
And today we'd like to introduce you to a special guest we have, Jane Durston. She is a nutritional therapist and health coach, and she helps people recover from burnout and depression. So welcome, Jane.
Hi, nice to be here.
Thank you for joining us. I'm kind of curious, as we get started, I read a little bit about your bio and was on your page, but if you could share with people, what had you come into this line of work and why burnout and depression?
Well, it started about 15 years ago. I am actually a doctor, a medically qualified doctor. And I experienced extreme workplace stress and became burnt out and depressed. And I suppose my journey over the time since then has really brought me to a position where I now see that it took me a long time to recover because I had to learn all the steps that I took. But now I now have that experience and those tools, and I can actually help people do it so much faster. So it's back to my personal experience, but using that experience now and rounding it all up together. So I use my medical experience, but I also use my nutritional therapy and the coaching side to actually help people get better even faster.
That's incredible.
And it makes you really well-rounded, doesn't it? You know, doctor, nutritionalist, and coach. Yeah. I mean, so somebody coming to you is saying to themselves, wow, no, she has exactly what I need in every area and expertise as well. So it just creates that comfort, you know, for clients coming in. And I'm interested, I did read your bio as well, and the part where you said that, when was it for you? You know, this broke the proverbial camel's back. And you hung up the phone, you were on the phone with the doctor. And you were incredibly stressed, and that was it. And you hung up that phone. What did you feel when you hung up that phone? What was that feeling?
A terrible feeling of desperation, of not knowing what I was going to do, but I knew it had to finish then. And I actually cleared my desk of all my personal belongings and put them in my bag, and went up to see the line manager, who eventually decided yes, he would see me. It was that feeling of desperation, but also a certain amount of relief, because I knew I was getting out, and I knew that was the right thing to do. It was very, very painful, but it was the right thing to do.
I'm really curious, kind of seeing both sides of this. I think there are some misconceptions sometimes about health professions, health coaches or physicians, and kind of seeing both sides of the coin, what might you see as an advantage to adding a health coach to the work that a physician may prescribe you to do?
To me, having that health coach bit is actually so much more important, because helping people to actually change how they think about themselves and also how they think about their feelings and emotions is actually key to actually helping them to take a step forward and giving them some responsibility and actually empowering them to accept that their health is in their own hands. And I think that is just an incredible thing to be able to do. You know, I have coached people now with extreme anxiety. And to actually see the changes in them, and to say to somebody to say to me, well, I don't need this prescription anymore. So because I feel so much better, and I'm always very careful that I don't overstep the mark. I always say to them, you must talk to your own physician about this. But to have them make that decision that actually, no, they don't need to take it, and that's what they're going to talk to their doctor about, is really, it's so heartwarming to be able to see people actually take that step.
It's, I think, a little bit about the length of time. We know that physicians' schedules are crammed, and maybe you felt that, right? Like seeing so many patients versus having someone that you have a little bit more consistent relationship with to sit down and help you work on those things.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I haven't practiced medicine for quite a while now. So, but yes, developing that one-to-one relationship is just so important. And it, seeing people change over the over a few weeks is incredible. And you know, they might not always understand exactly what's going on. In fact, someone actually said to me, I don't really know what you've done, but I'm just better and I don't really care. And I think, well, okay, fine. You know, I haven't done any harm, so that's okay.
We got our result.
Yeah. But no, it's I find it a very rewarding profession, and that's how I see it, a profession. It's something that has value, and you can give an awful lot of value back.
It's interesting because I, as you share this, like I had suffered with anxiety my entire life and didn't even know it. You know, because I was born in 67. I grew up in the 70s and 80s. It wasn't really something, unless it was like really bad.
Yeah.
As children, it really wasn't something that was really talked about. And I remember having a lot of anxiety over different things. There were specific triggers, but I never understood it. And as I got into my adulthood, I lost weight and I felt like I had more control over my life, and I never suffered from it until I had my divorce.
Right.
And then it came raging back. And I thought I was having heart attacks, and I got checked out for that. And I, like 3 months of different testing, thinking I had some kind of heart problem. And it was anxiety attacks I was having in the middle of the night. It was waking me up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And I was put on medication for it and was on it for a while until I got through the divorce. And it's just, it's one of those things that I think a lot of people have that don't even realize it, because I lived almost half my life with this. Without even realizing, it's very insidious.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that the whole thing about anxiety or stress, and the, you know, stress can cause anxiety, is that it is very insidious, and you don't actually know you're under a lot of stress or you have an anxiety problem until someone might actually say, you seem quite stressed. Are you okay? And I said, well, no, I'm always like this. That's, you know, this isn't quite normal. But until people actually sort of say something about it, I think people just get used to it until it either reaches a point where it has a tremendous effect on their life, or perhaps it just suddenly goes away. And then they think, oh, what's happened? You know, something's changed. But it's very easy to become complacent about it. And I think this is one of the reasons why, to a certain extent, people have this thing, well, I always work better under stress. It's not always the case. It's just the fact that they get so used to being at that level of stress that they don't know how else to work.
Right.
I think it's kind of cheered on socially too, right? It's almost like it's the norm if you're not stressed out or you're not... Yeah. Oh, you must be selfish. How do you take so much time off for yourself? Or, yeah. Right? It's almost like it's so conditioned into us that most people are living at this low level of chronic stress and anxiety.
Yeah, it's like a badge of honor. You know, I'm stressed.
Yeah.
Competition. I'm relaxed. That's fine.
Okay, Jane, I am super, super stressed. I look you up. I come to you, I sit down. How would we work together?
I generally spend 2 or 3 sessions with potential clients, actually finding out what they expect and what they're looking for. Sometimes people's expectations of a coach, particularly in the areas that I'm working in, it might not be entirely suitable. So I do spend time actually making sure, talking on the phone to them, and I say that might be 2 or 3 sessions, just finding out what they want before we actually go into an agreement about how we're actually going to work together. But the majority of my clients in this area are actually one-to-ones. And I work on Skype or Zoom or phone, whichever they find most comfortable. Because if they are stressed, then they need to be in the most comfortable environment they can. And then we work out a plan for actually what they want. And that can be anything from meal plans if they're not eating particularly well, or it could be referring them to another practitioner for some mindfulness. It's about a holistic approach so that we start in one area and really look at everything to find out where their stress triggers are, so that we can work on the whole person and not just pick out what they think is the problem, because quite often the problem isn't the problem that they think it is.
Exactly.
What do you think is the thing that makes it so difficult for people to come to terms or to notice that they're dealing with anxiety and depression?
I think there's an incredible amount of stigma attached to it. Mm-hmm. And nobody likes to admit that they might have a mental health problem. And in the UK in particular, we've got an awful lot of work going on to actually try and normalize having a mental health problem so that people feel able to actually come forward and seek help. But there's definitely a stigma attached to it. And that is also difficult, particularly if it's workplace stressed, is, you know, you might have to think about going to talk to your employer about what's going on. And that can raise all sorts of concerns about whether you're going to keep your job. The first thing people say, used to say to me when I used to say, well, I suffered with depression, was, oh, were you mad? No, I wasn't mad. I just had depression. And to have to explain to them that, you know, the two are not the same, and that actually depression is just an extreme of some of the feelings that people have on a normal basis, is something that I've got used to doing. And it's quite, in one respect, it's quite alarming that people feel that way about anxiety and stress. But in another way, I look on it as an opportunity to actually get the word out. That the fact is that, you know, it doesn't mean to say you're mad. You just have a mental health issue at that time.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, like, I remember when I was going through the anxiety and I was put on medication for it, and I actually had taken time off from work when I was having all of those symptoms and I didn't know what was going on. When it was diagnosed as anxiety, someone said to me, well, just change what you're thinking. Mm. Just change what you're thinking. And I mean, on the surface, it might seem like that's all you have to do, but unfortunately, for someone who's never had it, they don't understand. Like when the anxiety starts rising up, it's almost like a bullet train. Yeah. It arrives like a bullet train. You go from 0 to 300 miles an hour in like 5 seconds flat, and you don't even see it coming. Yeah. There is no chance of stopping it or changing your thought. It happens so quickly. It's like it is an attack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of the work I have found is required before it actually happens. Because once it happens, the horse is out of the barn and it's much harder trying to bring them back in. But all of the work trying to keep the horse in the barn, it's daily work.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's one of the things that I do now for myself, because it's what you've described about that, you know, that response, that anxiety response, it's an anxiety loop. So when you're in that loop, you become anxious and everything else makes you anxious. So it just feeds itself because you've got a physical response as well going on, and it just goes round and round and round and you cannot break out. But if you can actually do things like mindfulness and learn to appreciate your thoughts and to realize that they're your thoughts, they're not you, and that you can just let those thoughts go if you want. If you don't like them, you can choose another set of thoughts, and that can really, really help to break that stress loop or to stop it. But you have to practice it when you're not in that state, so that you know how to do it. And it's one of the key things that I use is mindfulness and meditation and visualization, so that people actually get used to being in a relaxed state, and they then begin to realize, I remember that, I want to go back to it. So that's really, really useful. Yeah.
I was having a conversation over the last week that I thought was kind of an interesting approach to some of these stressful thoughts. And they were explaining it in a way that I never really thought about it before. That just even a response like anxiety can be a learned behavior, right? It's like whatever fires together, wires together in the brain. Uh-huh. And I normally notice anxiety when I have a problem, because I can have this anxiety attack. And then after I come down from that, I have new motivation because I have adrenaline or all of these things pumping. And then it can almost like help me go solve the problem, because you get this boost of energy after you're all ramped up. Right. Mm-hmm. So instead, just to start to almost, you know, have the mindfulness and the awareness and start to reject. That's not I hear that. That's not the way that I'm going to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And like sitting with it until it passes, so that your brain starts to find, okay, this isn't a good way to get my needs met anymore. Mm. Maybe I should try joy, or maybe I should try another way to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And I thought it was like an interesting way to kind of flip that on its head a little bit and just be like, oh, I'm going to stop teaching my body that this is an effective way to get this need met, to like deal with this problem.
Yeah.
So kind of bringing that awareness into it. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting approach for people to try out, because like Dom, I've also dealt with years of anxiety, those racing thoughts, and it's not fun. No. But I think as a coach, I can see what is the positive intention that my body is having, mm-hmm. for repeating this behavior over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. You've learned how that actually gives you some results. They might not be the results that you want, but they give you a result. So if you can choose to actually say, I'm going to let that thought go, I'm going to find a different emotion, but it has to be something that you start when you're in a calm state. If you try and do it when you're in that heightened state, you just don't get anywhere. So I really encourage people to actually, practice mindfulness and look, particularly looking at thoughts and emotions on a daily basis, because it can then help you if you feel that sort of stress situation coming on, because that's what anxiety is. It's a heightened stress reaction, and it's that physiological response to what's going on in your body, and then it produces other sorts of emotions as well. Yeah, and it almost sounds too easy as well when you start to explain to people that they can choose to have a set of thoughts, or they can choose to have a different set of thoughts. It doesn't sound possible, so it can take a little bit of explanation and a bit of trial and error to actually to work them through actually making a choice.
I agree. It is easy. When you catch it before, it's like feeding the horse while he's still in the barn. He's willing to eat.
Yeah.
I've also heard it explained. It's like cars going by, and you get to decide if you're going to flag it down and jump in the passenger seat.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Yeah.
Or you can just let the car keep. But I think it's empowering, ultimately, to know that there is some amount of choice whether or not we're going to follow along with the thought, because I think it can feel very like I have no control, there's nothing I can do, I can't stop this, I feel maybe crazy, I don't know why this keeps happening, like I'm pretty logical and reasonable person, why do I keep going off on these tangents? And when we figure out when we can slow ourselves down enough, there is a choice whether or not we're going to get in the car or let the horse out of the barn or not, right? Whatever analogy works, just to know that there is some choice and we can slow ourselves down through meditation, through daily practices. So I think that offers a lot of hope for people who may be dealing with this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And some people will maybe sitting there saying, thoughts? You mean I have all this anxiety and all this, but thoughts are going to help me? How? Yes. Right? Yes. So you probably have a lot of skeptics, right, on the thought process. However, when you have them doing the meditation, when you have them doing the other things that de-stress them, like the thoughts and those other things, So do you have clients saying to you, Dr. Dressen, they helped me amazingly, or what kind of feedback do you get from clients that do the thought process?
Yeah, generally speaking, you know, people will be a little bit skeptical, but they're often almost desperate to try something else. And so that they, you'll send them away with a particular practice and they'll come back and say, I can't believe how much that helped. But it really, really did. And I feel so much better. And then you can actually start and build on that. Once you've got them into a position where they feel they can actually start to have an impact on their own condition, then they feel they can carry on. But it's sometimes just taking that little step and just giving them that small success, and then they can really feel the difference. And I think that's key, to feel that they have that control back, to feel that they can actually have an effect on their own health. It is key.
Jane, I'm kind of curious, like when someone is having to deal with anxiety on a regular basis and they start working with you, what have you found to be like the average time it takes for someone to begin feeling the effects of implementing these strategies that you have them do?
Everyone's a bit different, so there's no set time really, but it depends how anxious they are, and how, you know, how stressed they are, and what the stressor is, where it is in their life, how often they come across it. But I mean, I've seen differences in people after 2 or 3 weeks, and after 6 weeks, they're quite often showing real good signs of you know, being able to handle the stress, and to manage it, and to be not its victim anymore, to realize that they can actually step outside that, and actually make a difference. So it can be, let's say it varies, but probably from about 3 weeks onwards, you'll start to notice a difference. Mm-hmm. I try as far as possible to really break that anxiety loop as quickly as I can. So, you know, I'll use whatever tools I feel are appropriate to do that.
Awesome.
What a relief for people who have been searching for years and years to try to deal with these problems. It's an incredible what you're doing. I'm really curious, in your professional opinion, what is something that, if one of our listeners is dealing with depletion or depression or anxiety, what's something that they could start doing today that could be supportive to them?
I think one of the most important things they can do, and it's a really good, effective tool to help you break anxiety if you're sitting there, and is actually to learn a really easy breathing technique. And I really find those useful. And they're so easy to do, and you can virtually, you know, sit in an office and do it, and no one will notice, or sit in a car, or, you know, when you're stationary, and do it, and nobody will notice. So it's not something that, you know, you have a sign saying, you know, I am doing something. It's quite invisible. So, you know, I find that really, really helpful with people, and it shows them how quickly they can retrain their body to actually relax. And once you start to do that, you're in.
Do you have a favorite breathing exercise that you...
Yes. It's a very simple one. It's a 5-5-7 breath. So you explain to people that you don't take too full a breath to start with, otherwise you'll end up with your lungs too full and it won't feel comfortable. But just inhale gently. In for five, count to five, hold it for five, and then breathe out really, really slowly and gently for seven. And it's also really good to help you get off to sleep if you need to as well. If you're anxious when you go to bed, then try a 5-5-7 breath as well when you're lying there. And before you know it, you'll probably be asleep.
I've just been doing these breathing exercises since you've been talking about it, and I can testify for our listeners that it does in fact work. I'm feeling much better even just after a couple of minutes here with you all, and you couldn't even tell that I was doing some 5-5-7 breathing. So I love that. We don't do enough deep breathing.
No. And it's just a way of persuading your body. Because naturally, when we're relaxed, our respiratory rate goes down. So if you do that in a disciplined way, your body starts thinking, well, I'm breathing slowly, I must be relaxed. Well, I'll relax. And that's what it does. And it's just so simple, really effective.
Awesome. Well, I love that tool. It's something that I try to work in with clients and with myself because, I think we rush around so much in this world. So I love that tip. Yeah. And I'm just curious, do you have any final thoughts to share with our listeners today?
I think that what I would always say to somebody that's thinks that they might have anxiety or depression or anything like that is to seek help. Don't think that you're by yourself, and be open to looking at other ways of looking after yourself. Obviously you need to talk to your own doctor about it first, but you know, also talk to them about looking at other modalities to actually help you heal yourself.
That's such good things that we can really keep expanding our minds. And if you think you've tried everything, try something else and keep reaching out. There is going to be the thing that works for you. It's just a matter of continuing to seek that out for yourself. So
yeah.
One more amazing resource for our listeners, if anyone is dealing with these kind of things, that Jane is a great resource to be able to reach out. She's got a lot of tools and skills to be able to bring to you to really help get this problem taken care of. So thank you so much for joining us today on the Second Nature Show. It was a pleasure having you. And where can our listeners find or follow you at?
I'm on Facebook at Your Life Balance Doctor. And they can also have a look at my website, which is www.yourlifebalancedoctor.com.
Wonderful. Awesome. Thank you so much. And Dom, where can our listeners find and follow you?
They can find me, the best place is my website at coachdomcampbell.com.
Awesome. Donna?
Well, designstatecoaching.com and also Facebook, Donna Masterson, and Donna at designstatecoaching.com.
Awesome. You can find and follow me at Facebook at Fully Aligned Coaching or on Instagram at Alex, the Fully Aligned Coach. And you can find and follow us on The Second Nature Show on Facebook and YouTube or by emailing thesecondnatureshow@gmail.com. And we will be back with you next Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. And remember, when you change your habits, you can change your life. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.